start that up. So, but anyway, we didn't do a lecture yesterday just because, you know, it feels weird lecturing to one person. But as I told Aaron, we'll probably... And did you see the email first? I got to work and I was going to come around here at 9 just to see. Did you come to class?
I did.
Yeah, shoot.
Back to my cubicle.
Yeah, and then you saw the email. I did mean to come around here at 9. And
I do have a doctor's appointment at 9:15 because they weren't able to figure out a thing with that on Friday next week.
Friday of next week at 9:15.
Yeah.
Well, we probably will just have to count on going for like 2 hours, both Tuesday and Thursday or something.
Okay.
Try to catch up. I mean, I can't say anything because on November 5th, which I believe is a Tuesday, I've got a dentist appointment at 8 o'clock, and they usually take an hour. So I was going to just tell you guys, we'll start lecturing at 9:30 that day. Give me a little time to get back. Mm-hmm. So we got to have some flexibility. So anyway, we didn't lecture yesterday, so we're at the same point we were when we left off before the exam. I think I'd just done the Corixity and ready to start the Octarity.
Yes.
And we were, like I said, we'll just probably count on doing a couple longer lectures Tuesday and Thursday and next week to catch up a little bit. I mean, we're running behind anyway, so we're probably going to have to start doing that a little bit more often. Anyway, so Jerry's got your exams, and so I haven't even seen him yet. So anyway, anybody have any questions before we start today? I was going to say, when you guys, when we were looking at the Corixids, and you guys were comparing the Corixids and the Notodendrons, and I noticed you had your stuff glued to points and they weren't onto pins.
Yeah.
And we should have, I guess, it's probably with some of that how-to was in that handout, but we should have probably had a little lesson on how to point insects.
Mm-hmm.
And because I noticed, and really they're not bad, they're pretty good. You cut your own points, right?
No, Jerry gave me quite a few. Like, we have a puncher for those, right?
Just now? Well, okay. I thought those looked like ones. The ones I saw were ones that didn't come from that punch. Okay. But yeah, we've got a hand punch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just want to make it clear you don't have to cut your own points. We have a punch to.
And
so.
If it wasn't available through him, I'd have gone to Concordia because I know Dr. Bishop has that.
Oh, yeah. We've got several. I keep one in my office, so I've got one that I use all the time, and I know they've got one in the museum, so all right, well, the Octarity is not a required family, so I'm not going to say a whole lot about them. They're an interesting group. They're not actually truly aquatic. They're more along the edges of streams and rivers. Kind of hop around or move around close. I think the closest they get up here, I've seen records from Missouri or Nebraska, but that's about it. I at one time thought they might have got into southern Minnesota, but I don't know that that's true. I've caught them down in Louisiana, and so they're an interesting little creature. But since we're hurting on time, that's all we'll say about those. But now the next family is the Gelasticoridae. And again, these may not quite get here either, but they're a lot more common. The Octarids are more rare. You don't run across them very often. They're hard to find. But these Gelasticoridae is a common family. Again, they're not in the water as much as they're along the edges of creeks and rivers, kind of in sandy or sandy, pebbly areas. The ocelli are present, but they're really hard to see. I can't hardly ever find them on these things. These are commonly called toad bugs because they kind of look like little tiny miniature toads, mm-hmm. and they do hop around. So they are predatory, feeding on other insects and stuff around the creeks and rivers and streams. Again, the antennae are short and concealed under the head. The front legs are kind of raptorial, meant for catching other insects. The forewings are fused together, so they can't move, so they don't fly. Usually they are found around the rivers and creeks. There's a tropical genus called Nerthra that is sometimes found farther away from water and that. But the only species we have in the United States is this Gelastocoris oculatus. But in the southern part of the U.S., you can fairly easily find them along bodies of water in that. My interesting story about these is that honeymoon trip I told you I went on in the western U.S. Again, it was insect money paying my way, and so I was doing a lot of collecting, and yet my wife was tagging along, and to keep her interest, I did two things. I said, well, several things. I wanted you to take her to take a lot of pictures, and then wherever we went, and I was sweeping, getting insects off of different plants and stuff, flowers and that, she had the plant field guide. She was supposed to help me figure out what plants I was getting things on. And then third, I told her, I said, you should pick a group that you might like and see if you can find them. And this is what she picked. She said, she knew a lot about insects before. She goes, I like Gelastocoris. I'll try to find Gelastocoris everywhere we go. Anyway, again, I don't think you would confuse these with anything else. They're pretty distinctive looking. The next family is the Nocoridae. Called Ooh. The creeping water bugs. And this is the one that earlier when we were talking about the Bellostomatids, I said you might confuse Bellostomatids with these. But remember, the Bellostomatids had those little air straps that were sometimes hard to see. These don't have the air straps. Also, Bellostomatids had a number of longitudinal veins in the membrane. These really don't have any veins in the wing membrane at all. And then the other thing I mentioned is that, remember, the Bellostomatids, the eyes kind of bulged out of the head, so it gave the head kind of a trilobe look. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, here the eyes are right in the line, same line as the head, so it's just a nice, smooth, circular outline. These, again, are fairly common in the waters, pools, ponds, swamps in the southern half of the United States, but there is one that does get up into North Dakota. It was kind of an interesting find, but over south of Jamestown, about straight south of Jamestown and then to the west, it's been found. And actually one of my past graduate students, Paul Tinarella, and a guy out of Jamestown, or over there, published a paper together documenting that this Nocorid was here in North Dakota. These can deliver a fairly mean bite again. In fact, when I was a graduate student, I took an aquatic entomology class, and the professor, this Dr. Folkerts, I might have mentioned before, he would just drive out into the country and see a nice pond or body of water and say, this looks good. And we'd jump out of the car, and next thing I know, he'd be waist deep in the water in his plain clothes, and the rest of us, like lemmings, would just follow him in, and we'd be out there looking at stuff and collecting. But one of those episodes, all of a sudden, one of the students started screaming and yelling and taking their pants down real quick. One of these Nocorids had swum up their pants leg and was biting them on the leg inside. So, this same guy, it was a neat class. And he, like I said, he was a wonderful teacher. He's the one that liked to live out in the nature and study. He wanted to study insects on pitcher plants. That get into the pitcher plants or some insects, and he would just go and camp out there for a month, just live among the pitcher plants and observe.
When you say live among the pitcher plants, would they actually go in? Are they adapted to go in and out of the pitcher plants?
Yeah, there's some, you know, pitcher plants are meant to catch insects for food. Yeah. But there are some insects that have adapted that they can actually live inside. They may actually steal some of the food, or it's become shelter for them, and they don't get eaten in that. And so he wanted to study some of those insects that had adapted to living in pitcher plants.
So, I don't think that was a possibility, but I guess.
Oh, yeah, the insects will figure everything out. So, but again, we did a lot of field trips. In fact, he took us on a week-long field trip. This was when I was at Auburn, Alabama, but we drove all the way down to the Florida Everglades. He took us down there and to study aquatic insects. And I remember it was more than a one-day drive, and we were just driving down the interstate, and all of a sudden same thing. He says, this looks like a good place. Pulled off the interstate, and we just hopped a fence and threw our sleeping bags out on the ground in somebody's pasture. And that's where we spent the night sleeping. So he was an unusual guy. And it was cold that night, too. It was down around freezing in northern Florida. So I remember being in my sleeping bag and just my nose sticking out. Anyway, again, off the subject, but so anyway, it's a neat group, and the common genus is this Pelycorus. So they, again, have swimming legs. The hind legs and that are adapted for swimming. Front legs are kind of raptorial. There's one down in the desert southwest that seems to have these long, pointed projections on the side of the abdomen. I have no idea why they're like that. But again, one of my colleagues down at Louisiana State, when I was down there, she went out west and caught some of those and gave me a couple. So I've got a couple of those somewhere in my collection. The next family is the Notonectidae. This is the family that I said you probably would might confuse with the Corixidae, but again, you can see now that you've got them to compare, they don't really look anything alike. These don't have those transverse stripes going across the back like the Corixids did. The front tarsi are not modified into the pala. If you recall, the Corixids kind of, their wings were kind of held more flat over their back. These are more roof-like. These often have a little ridge or carina on the underneath side going up and down the middle of the body. Their beaks are short, but they're still more beak-like. Remember, the Corixids had the more cone-shaped mouth parts, and they fed on algae. These are, again, more predatory. They are called back swimmers because when you see them in the water, they'll usually be upside down with their ventral surface upwards. A lot of these can stridulate. They also respire by a physical gill. They'll go and get a bubble of water that kind of is held under the underneath side of its body. So they'll have a bubble that they can breathe in and out of. And those things, they can usually stay underwater a long time with a bubble. In fact, sometimes the oxygen will diffuse into the bubble, while when they breathe, they give off nitrogen. The nitrogen will diffuse out, and it's kind of a concentration thing. But sometimes they don't even have to come to the surface to replenish their bubble, at least for a long time. These come to lights. They can also deliver a painful bite. I used to catch these all the time and never worry about it. I don't think anybody really warned me. But then there was one time where I had some in my net, and I was just getting them out of the net, putting them in, and one of them nailed me. And boy, it was painful. So I'm a little more careful catching, especially the bigger ones. I don't know if the little ones can do too much or not. They are several genera. I usually point out mostly just the two. The little ones, like you're getting there in the genus Buenoa.
Buenoa, okay.
I don't see it in there. Buenoa. the larger ones, which we should have some larger ones, would just be in the genus Notonicta. So, bueno are small. And these are large. That's more just for your information. There's some other genera. There's another one called Martiriga and that, but... So... And then the last family in the Nepomorpha, the truly aquatic ones, is what we call the pygmy back swimmers, the Pleiadae. These look a lot like the Notonectids, except they're really little tiny. These are now getting down to the size of a pinhead, and maybe a little bit bigger, but they are fairly closely related to the Notonectids. They can swim and rest upside down. Their bodies look more beetle-like, though, than the Notonectids. It's not the... I mean, you can still see the line down the middle. And, I mean, they're still... Well, they're not beetles. They got the sucking mouth parts and that, so... The hind legs are not as distinctly modified for swimming. They're... As you see in the Notonectids. So these are very small, 1.6 to 2.3 millimeters, so usually less than 2.5 millimeters. The front legs are not distinctly raptorial. They also lack that keel on the underneath side of the abdomen. But they also respire by a physical gill, meaning a bubble of water. Again, they're in ponds and marshes. And we have caught them in North Dakota, down in the Mere Pool area. We've collected them, so. I've actually, sometimes they've come to lights and can be in huge numbers. I actually have probably hundreds of these from Paraguay. This Ed Riley went down to Paraguay on a collecting trip, and he came back and just literally had hundreds and hundreds of those, and gave me a bunch. Okay, now we move into the next infraorder, the Geromorpha. Remember the Geromorpha, these are the things that are kind of aquatic, but not really in the water. They're on the surface of the water, or might be around the edges of the water. But now also notice that they have longer, more conspicuous antennae. Remember the Nepomorpha had the really small antennae that were kind of concealed under the heads and that. They have some trichobothria on the head. The antennae are usually four-segmented and visible from above. And as I said, they're semi-aquatic or shore-inhabiting. The first family I'll talk about is this Mesovelidae. At least in the United States, there's not very many species in this family. Only two or three, maybe a few more. Three North American species, it says. But one of them is very common. This, what's the species name? Is it written on there? Molsanti. It's Mesovelia molsanti. Is really common, and it'll be in almost any kind of body of water, including big puddles in your cornfield. And I've seen them, collected them, like I said, in big puddles in agricultural fields that have like oil and gasoline on them, and they're just really tolerant to everything. So these are called pond treaders or water treaders. They'll be on the surface of the water. They're fairly small, 2 to 4 millimeters. These are usually greenish or greenish yellow in color. The rostrum's three-segmented. What you'll confuse these with a little bit later is the family Veleidae, but this again has the apical claws. So right there, that in the middle of this handout on the Mesovelidae, that upper, in the middle of the upper one is what they have. Looks like Jerry put here's the anti-apical claws, the one just below it. This is what I drew earlier, but notice how the last tarsal segment on that picture goes on out and the claws come out before the apex. this is not what's seen in this family. It's just there to give you a comparison. The upper one is what you would see in this family. So that bottom one is what we'll see in the validity and the Gerity when we get to it later. So the claws are apical. The wings, there's no veins in the membranous part, and it's kind of more confluent with even the basal part. There's some veinage in that, and so it makes it look thicker on the basal half than the apical half, but it's all kind of just confluent with each other. Not all individuals have wings. There are the winged and wingless forms. And you see some of those over on the right-hand side. There's a winged form and a non-winged form. Ocelli are present in the winged forms. They're absent in the non-winged forms. Again, the scutellum is visible in the winged forms, but it's not really visible in the non-winged forms. You can see that on those two bottom right ones. You really don't see the scutellum, but that one in the upper right, you can see this small triangular scutellum. Again, they're on about any kind of body of water. Some will come to lights. They do occur in North Dakota. We've caught these down at the Mirror Pool area again fairly commonly. So okay, the next family is the Hydrometridae. Interesting little family. Called marsh treaders or water measurers, but they look like little stick insects almost. Mm-hmm. The one on the right is an unusual form. It actually, you don't find it, you know, it's a tropical thing. I actually collected some in Central America and some in French Guiana, but it's really rare and not always. I've caught it at lights or sweeping, not always around water. But the ones that we're most familiar with in that are those on the left-hand side of that of your handout, the ones that look like little tiny stick insects. So you might confuse them with this stick insect, but these are much smaller. We're talking about only about 8 millimeters in length, so they're not very big at all. The head is as long or longer than the thorax. So I don't know, the head is all this, and the thorax is right there, about the same length anyway, or longer. Here's the head on that one, and there's the thorax on that one. The ocelli are reduced or absent. The beak is usually four-segmented. The eyes kind of bulge conspicuously on the lateral margins of the head. So it's kind of a long stick-like shaped head with the eyes bulging out on the sides. They may or may not be winged. Again, the claws are apical. These are along marshes or pools, slow-moving water. They're really hard to see. In fact, any time I've really collected them, it's been with that technique of using the aquatic net and going up along the edges of streams and rivers where, or pools of water where there's plants and vegetation, and dumping the contents into a big white enamel pan, and then just sitting there staring for 10 or 15 minutes, and after a while you'll see one move here or there. Or sometimes you can, without doing the pan thing, if there's vegetation in that, you can just look at it on the water in there and find it. So My notes say they should occur here, but they've not officially been reported from North Dakota. My notes also say I think I remember seeing some down at Mirpool, but I don't have specimens or the records right now. So they have been recorded from Minnesota, South Dakota, and Manitoba, so they should be here. So that'd be a good catch if we could go out and get some hydrometrics from North Dakota and verify that they're here. The next family that you have a handout for is the Hebridae. And I've written in my notes in the margin, not required with a question mark. And so I think this is one we're kind of phasing out. I have in the past required this family, but I don't think I'm going to have you be required to know this family. These are called velvet water bugs. They're really small. They look a lot like some of the Veleids that we'll talk about in a minute. They do have apical claws, whereas the Veleidae have anti-apical claws. These just don't look like, and they don't. They don't move around very fast. The Veleids are a little faster moving insects. These will be down in the algae and stuff like that, plant material and stuff. Again, if you collect a bunch of plant material and algae and dump it in a white enamel pan, these things will eventually start crawling out of it. They're called velvety water bugs because they are covered by a layer of hairs that almost looks like velvet. It helps. It's kind of hydrophobic hairs, so it repels water and helps it stay out of the water, helps it have a bubble of air around it to breathe and that. So we call that a hydrofuge covering of hairs, water repelling. Again, I've collected them in white enamel pans. I also collected these down at Auburn, Alabama. On the edge of campus, they had an arboretum that had a pond in it. And one winter down there, which winters are pretty mild, the pond dried up. And I went out into the middle of where the pond was and took some soil samples and just ran Berlazies just to see. And some of these aquatic groups came out of it. I think sometimes when these bodies of water dry up, they go into like diapause or an estivation, where they just kind of reduce their metabolism and lay there in the litter, waiting until water comes in again, and then they become active in that. But actually, some of these hebrids fell out of the soil sample into the. I think I only had water in the bottom of it, so it didn't kill them right away. They were skating around in the bottom of it. In the cup thing, so. The next family is the Veleidae. This is the first of the two families that now have anti-apical claws. Mm-hmm. So up there in the upper right-hand corner, you can see how the claws, they come out of the last tarsal segment before the apex, just before the apex. The Veleidae, this group is actually near and dear to my heart. This is that same aquatic entomology class required a collection. We had to turn in a collection, and the professor made us all choose a group, a family or some group to collect extra hard. I have thought about it and maybe have done it in the past in this class, done the same thing. But I had to pick a group, and actually I picked the Veleidae. And so I was going all over Alabama trying to catch as many different species of Veleidae as I could. They come in several different body forms. These in the lower right-hand corner are usually very tiny. They're called, and the name implies it, they're called Microvelias, the genus. And again, they look a lot like the Hebrids, or sometimes even like the Mesoveleids, but they have the anti-apical claws. This one in the bottom center is a little bit larger, and usually black in color, and it's one of them that's called the riffle bug. It's a common name's up there, the riffle bug, and it's in fast moving parts of the river. They'll be in little pools, right, but they'll be in large numbers skating around where the water moves pretty darn fast. hence the name riffle bugs. And we have collected these on Buffalo River, the river there that goes through the Moorhead Science Center, Buffalo River. I've collected these there. Then there's some that are a little bit larger and more slender that are not very fast moving. In fact, the only time I've ever collected these are they're holding on to aquatic vegetation coming out of the water in that. And actually, this is the genus Paravelia, but it's actually been changed. It's now Steinovelia. So anyway, the Veleidae, they're called broad-shoulder water striders or riffle bugs. They are anti-apical. There's some chance you might confuse some of the larger ones with some of the smaller water striders in the family Geridae that we're going to do next. But usually it's really easy to tell them apart. If you look on all these, if you go take the hind leg and the end of the femur, and if you extended the leg straight back, so the end of the femur would come around like that, it wouldn't extend beyond the end of the body. So here's the end of the body's there, and the hind femur doesn't go beyond it. Same thing here. If you rotated this thing down, it won't go beyond the end of the body. All of these are that way. When we get to the next family on the Geridae, you'll see how that's different. Again, these can be winged or non-winged. In fact, the non-winged ones are probably more common than the winged individuals. They also have this hydrofuge covering of hair. Males are sometimes phoretic. That is that they sometimes will ride around on the backs of the females, have the females take them around. Again, you can find them in about any kind of body of water. Microvelia will be on around the shore edges of shores, and that on still water or slower moving water. That Steinovelia would be on the plants coming out of water. The Velia. Ragovelia is what's there in the middle, is the genus name. Ragovelia is on the riffles. The Ragovelia have a interesting thing, and let's see, is it just the hind tarsi are deeply cleft? What we're getting at is right here is the hind tarsi come out here like this. My thing's very worn out, but it'd be like that. So there's a big cleft in the middle of it. And in that cleft is this fan-like thing of hairs that helps catch the water so it can push itself through the water easier. When you've collected them and that, those hairs kind of all collapse, and it's almost like a fan that is not expanded anymore. So it's hard to see in preserved specimens, but live ones on the water, they have this fan-like structure that they can help them move through the water. And then the next family is the Geridae. These are the water striders. And the larger ones I don't think you would confuse with anything else. They just look like a water strider. Again, the claws are anti-apical. See an example down there in the lower left, but the claws come out before the apex of the last tarsal segment. Now, some of the smaller ones you might confuse with Veleidae, but as I mentioned last time, now look at where the apex of the femur is, and if you rotate it back, it's way beyond the apex of the abdomen. So you rotate that around, and it goes.
It misses the apex. Yeah.
It's way beyond. So the Veleidae doesn't go beyond the apex of the abdomen. Geridae, it goes way beyond. So, Again, tarsal claws and apical. Mesothoracic legs are closer to the metathoracic legs than the prothoracic legs. So I don't know, I didn't mention that, but what they're saying is these middle legs come off right here. Here's the hind legs, and so the distance between the middle and hind legs is much smaller than the distance between the middle and front legs. So the middle and hind legs are closer together than they are to the front legs. Where in the velleity it's about equal. All those are about equal. Ocelli are usually present but very small. Rostrum four segmented. I already said that about the femora. Again, you may have winged or short winged or no winged individuals. They also usually have a hydrofuge covering of hairs. They do what's called ripple communication. They've got sensory structures on their legs and that can sense vibrations or ripples in the water. One, it helps them communicate with each other, but it also gives them an idea if there's prey nearby. These are predatory, and so they can sense by the vibrations in the water if there might be another insect that fell on the surface of the water. This is an interesting group in that, maybe I hadn't said this, we think about insects being able to evolve to conquer almost every habitat in the world. There's one, well, I'm not going to talk about the horribly cold, we know that, but there's one habitat where the insects really haven't been able to conquer. Do you know what that would be?
What's that? Extremely hot? I don't know.
No, there's things where it's really hot and stuff too. The one place where the insects, there's some, but not very many, they've not really been able to adapt to saline water areas. They're not out in the oceans.
Yeah, another thing,
isn't there one insect that has...
Well, you can catch some of these aquatic Hemiptera and some of the aquatic beetles. You can catch them in brackish waters where the fresh and salt water are mixing. And then this is one of the groups where there are some individuals that live on the surface of oceans and that. Way out in the middle of oceans, you can, like down in the Sargasso Sea and stuff, you can find Jared sometimes. But truly aquatic insects in the oceans are very rare. I mean, insects, period. Yeah. One, I don't know if they just haven't been able to deal with the high salt concentrations. Some people say that's the reason, but I mean, insects have figured out how to adapt everything else. I wouldn't have thought that'd be a limiting factor. Some say it's that other arthropods have conquered the oceans, the things like shrimp and crabs, and so they've already got the competitive edge on insects in the oceans and stuff. But anyway, this is one group that you can find some at least on the surface out on the ocean and stuff. So. One last family in the Geromorpha. Again, I don't have it marked. Oh, yeah, I do. This is not required. It's called the Macrovilleidae. There's only a couple species. They're more western in distribution, but one of these does come into the western part of the U.S., but again, it looks like the microvilia or the mesovilia, just a little bit larger maybe. So, but anyway, it's not a required family. So that finished up the Geromorpha. Mm-hmm. Now we will go on to the next infraorder, which is called the Leptopodomorpha. The Leptopodomorpha is kind of a transitional group. It's, again, these things occur along rivers and streams and creeks, but they're not in the water and they're not really on the surface of the water. You'll find them oftentimes on on big rocks and things out in the middle of the water or that. But it's considered kind of a transitional group. It's not a large intra-order. There's only a couple families. The Leptopodidae, which does not occur in North America, at least not naturally. I don't know if there's been some invasive ones or not, but it occurs in Europe and that. But this family, the Salidae, is common throughout the world and in North America, and we catch them fairly often here. So these little Salids. What else do we want to say about the Salids? They're called shore bugs. They have a trichobothria on the head. You can see the antennae are they're four segmented, but they're conspicuous. So they're not like the Nepomorpha. The rostrum's three segmented. These, the membrane has like three or four closed cells. You see the closed cells?
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of characteristic. So it's kind of longitudinal. Again, there's a picture in the middle of just the wing, and you can see the three or four closed cells. Actually, my notes say four or five closed cells, but anyway, in that 3 to 5 range of kind of parallel closed cells. I said the group's evolutionarily important that it has ties to both the semi-aquatic groups and the terrestrial groups. Adults can run and jump fast. They are very quick. You can see them when you're out around the creeks and rivers on the rocks and stuff. Sometimes you can see them, but they are kind of hard to catch. One, they're not on plants and stuff that make it easy. It's like you guys going after the tiger beetles. Mm. You know, you can't really sweep through them. You can sweep right above them and hope they fly into the net as you're going by. But they do come to lights a lot. I catch them, like I said, I run lights in my backyard a lot sometimes. I didn't much this summer, but in past years, and I get them at my sheets at my lights all the time and stuff. So.
You think it's too late for these guys right now? Or?
This weekend, you might. You know, things are still, you know, today it's supposed to be close to 60 and 62 or 63 tomorrow. I was out working in my backyard a little bit last night. I had a limb come down and was cutting it up. And mosquitoes were still coming and biting me, so it hadn't been cold enough to kill off all the mosquitoes yet. So
okay. So
maybe around some streams and creeks and looking on the rocks and things, you might still find some of these.
Might try running lakes tomorrow, though.
Yeah, it'd be worth a try. There's some things that are adapted for this fall weather. There's some moths called buck moths that are maybe just now coming out right now. So down in the south in Louisiana, the buck moths didn't come out till very end of November and early December. So they're always a late season thing.
Oh, well, that's pretty.
Since we're running, normally that's a good stopping point. I think we'll spend just another 5 or 10 minutes and keep going since we're running behind. Now we go into the terrestrial infra orders. We'll have the Semicomorpha and then the Pentomorpha, which are the two largest infra orders with lots of families in each. And so this is the Semicomorpha. These now are mainly terrestrial insects. The antennae will be long and conspicuous. In the Semicomorpha, the antennae are usually four segmented. Again, I don't know. I usually try to give characters for the infra order, and there's so many exceptions, it just doesn't hardly make it worth it. You know, it says beak four segmented, except it's only three segmented in the Anthochoridae, Regivi, and the Semicidae. Mid and hind tarsi are three segmented, except in the Piasmatidae, Tingidae, and Phimanidae. Ocelli are present, except the Tingidae, most of the Myridae. So, like I say, there's just so many exceptions, it almost doesn't make it very easy to use that. The abdomen doesn't have trichobothria. And there's no trichobothria on the head. A lot of the pentamorphin groups will have trichobothria on the abdomen, so that's one thing that might help. But Otherwise, I'm not sure what the key characters are to separate the Simicomorpha from the Pentamomorpha, other than, to me, they just kind of look different than that some. So anyway, this is the Simicomorpha, and we'll go through a number of families. The first one I'll talk about is the Tingidae, which are called lace bugs. And I'm pretty sure you guys have some, because I think I collected some on trips and gave them to you guys. This is the group that Alex works on. And so to try to keep up with him and help him, I've also read up and tried to collect a lot of tingids. And actually, I've been working on a project, the catalog of the Pentamoidae of the world. That's one of my lifelong projects. But to help me understand what he's doing, I've also been working on a catalog of the Tingidae. I think he's working on one too. We kind of need to join forces and put them together in that. But I've got a pretty good catalog of the Tingidae of the world going right now and stuff. So these are fairly small, usually 2 to 5 millimeters in length. A lot of them are kind of dainty, lacy looking. There'll be white and this reticulate venation. This is what we were talking about. Notice the venation is more reticulate. Lots of little cells throughout the whole wings. As I said, a lot of them are kind of white and lacy looking, but there are some that are a little more elongate and compact and brown in color, not so dainty in that looking, not lacy looking at all. They're kind of made to blend in with their surroundings. They actually look like grass seeds. You'll see them a lot of times will be feed on grasses and stuff. And so they'll be the pale yellowish browns or dark browns to blend in with the stems of grass, old grass, or the grass seeds. Again, wings with numerous closed cells, the reticulate sculpturing, throughout. There's no real division into the corium, clavis, and then the membrane. You don't really see a membranous area in most of these. Some have the, this reticulate or lacy sculpturing is just in the adults. The immatures are really spiny looking things. That's one down in the lower right hand corner. I said some are teardrop shaped, look more like a grass seed. The ocelli are absent. Now the pronotum usually has a process going back over the scutellum. Oftentimes this dorsal area will be kind of really inflated. Some it goes over the head, it's called a hood, if it goes up over the head-like structure, but oftentimes it goes back over the scutellum, so you can't really see the scutellum from above. This is what you're seeing is the pronotum going backwards. They often have ridges in that area. These areas that are kind of expanded out laterally are called paranota. Yeah, it's written up there, paranota. So those are those expansions on the pronotum there toward near the head. They often have some spines or spikes on the head going out between the antennae in front of the head. Tarsi are usually about 2-segmented. These are plant feeders. Especially the more white and dainty, lacy looking ones you find on the underneath sides of leaves. A lot of them feed on trees, but there are some on herbaceous plants and that too, but there's one that gets on sycamore trees. You can turn over sycamore leaves and almost always find the sycamore lace bug. There's one that gets on the underneath side of leaves on oak trees. Real common, gets large numbers sometimes on the oak leaves. There's one that's on bad on hackberry up here some years. The ones I think I was finding on our trips were maybe on the underneath side of basswood trees and stuff. So, and it's oftentimes a different species on each different tree species you find. So they're kind of host specific. A few have been known to vector viral wilts. where they feed, they cause a little yellow necrotic lesion. You'll see these little white. Oftentimes, if you don't turn the leaf over, you can still tell they're probably there. You can see lots of little yellow tiny spots. And so you turn it over, and there they are. Sometimes you'll be too late, and they'll have done their damage and have left already. But some of these have been used for biological control of weeds. If you've got an invasive weed, for example, lantana is an invasive weed in many parts of the world, and there's some tinges that feed on lantana. And so they've been introduced different areas to help control lantana. And some of these will come to lights, and so again, it's what Alex is working on. Let's cover one more family, and then we'll call it quits. But this is a big family, so this is the family Myridae, or the plant bugs. This is the largest family in the Hemiptera. There's more species of Myridae than any other family. There's about 223 genera and close to 2,000 species just in North America. These, you can recognize Myrids, one of the characters, and it shares it with some of the others, but this is one of the families that has Acunius. Remember what Acunius is?
Acunius is, off the top of my head, I can't remember.
It's where you go on that outside margin of the wing.
Oh, yep.
And there's a little indentation there, and that suture goes in, and it divides that the end of the corium into a little triangular area called Acunius. So some of them you can't see it very well, but here's the little fracture on this lateral view. So anyway, there you can see it right there would be the Acunius. Mm-hmm. So Myrids have Acunius. As I said, so there's a couple other families, the Anthochoridae, when we get to it, it also has Acunius. But Myridae do not have ocelli, where Anthochoridae do have ocelli. Except for one subfamily in the Myridae. This thing down in the lower left-hand corner is in a different subfamily called the Isometopini. Mm-hmm. And they have ocelli. But they're rare. You don't usually run across those. They do occur up here. We have caught some Isometopines up here. Also, another way to tell these from the Anthochoridae is that the Myridae usually have one or two closed cells in their wings. And that's what we're showing down here in the middle. As you can see, there's one or two small closed cells in the membrane. And the Anthochoridae usually do not have that structure. In fact, it's hard to see any veins in their wings at all. So the beak is usually four-segmented. As I said, wing membrane with one or two closed cells at the base, opposed to the anthochorids, which are usually black wings in the wing membrane. A lot of the species are plant feeders, but not all of them. There are some predatory species, so there's a few that have been looked into for biological control. They feed on other small insects or on the eggs of other insects. But there are a lot that are plant feeders, including some that are major pests. One of the most common ones is called the tarnished plant bug, which I believe is this thing on the first handout, center to the left. This is called the tarnished plant bug. Very common. In fact, you might still be able to get those now. Although I think wherever we went collecting, if you were sweeping the weeds out there, we were catching tarnished plant bugs. So, and it's, the thing is, a lot of Myrids are fairly host specific. They'll only feed on a few plant species or just one family of plants. This tarnished plant bug will feed on about anything. It's got a huge host list, and it can be damaging on cotton, on soybeans, on corn, lot of different things. This one here in the middle is a little tiny thing called the garden flea hopper. It can be on things like eggplants and solanaceous plants. Although around here, I catch them more on white clover. The one in the upper left-hand corner, you may have seen these, but imagine those pale areas being bright yellow. That's what it looks like. It's yellow and black striped. It's called, the four-lined plant bug. But it's been real common in my garden, flower gardens the last years. And it feeds on a number of different things in there. Some of my mints or the herbs that my wife has, it gets on thistle really bad. And some other flowers and that. Let's see. Some of those to the right. That one there gets kind of on herbaceous plants around grasses and stuff. Did he have? Oh no, this is the only handout he's got. Anyway, lots and lots of species. And this is another family that I like, even though, you know, I don't work on it much. The reason being is when I went out collecting with Ed Riley, he was a chrysomelid worker in the beetles, and they're very host specific. And so a lot of times, I mean, he had such a good collection that some of our collecting trips, he'd be going out looking for one specific species of chrysomelid that he hadn't caught before. And he could look up, well, this is the plant that it's known to feed on. And so we'd go out and look for the plant first. And once we found the plant, then we'd usually find the beetle. And it's hard to do with a lot of groups, but the beetle, those chrysomelid groups, you could do that, but the myriads are another one that, and so while I was down there, he kind of got me interested in collecting lots of myriads. And now I've been working on that paper pretty hard up here for North Dakota. That's one of them I'd really like to get published, is the Myriadi of North Dakota. Again, North Dakota has not been very well collected or documented anyway. Probably like at least a third to half of the species have never been recorded from North Dakota. I'm finding so many things up here that we had no idea occurred around here. And so the trouble is, it's a big group, and they're kind of difficult. And so I've got a good friend of mine who works at the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C., and he's a myriad expert. And he's going to help me. He and I are going to work on this together. I mean, I've got it all pretty well hammered out, but I need him to help verify IDs and stuff. What's interesting, this guy, his name's Tom Henry, and we didn't know each other until professionally, once we became entomologists and both worked in insect systematics. And yet when we first met, we found out that we actually grew up as kids about 15 or 20 miles from each other in central Indiana. So we're both from about the same place. We were in different counties, so my high school played in sports teams in our county, and his played in their county, and yet we both lived in he lived in the southern part of his county, and I lived in the northern part of mine, so we were pretty close to each other. Anyway, I think I'll quit there for now. We're a little bit over time and stuff, so Myriadi are done. We'll look at the Anthocoridae next, which, like I said, it has a few of the same characters as the Myriadi, but there's some differences in that, so. Any questions before we shut everything down for today? Yeah.